Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with metaphysics, of course, and some elements of science, but definitely the esoteric side of life, meaning the hidden side. Because I thought tonight we would talk about the esoteric elements of the 2012 elections. And there's a great deal that I haven't really talked about in terms of why and what is taking place at this particular time with these elections in the United States. For those of you who are not in the U.S., you may have still heard a good deal about the elections here and may know something about them as well. I think the most significant thing to start with, most significant element to start with, is the change in the rays, as maybe some of you know I've talked about before, which is that there's four rays out of seven. Rays are types of energy to go through each of our seven centers. And these centers rely upon these reinforced energies, four out of seven in each particular time period of life on Earth. And the four out of seven rays at the present time are the following. They are the seventh ray, the second ray. Some of you are familiar with the fact that the third ray is going out, but it still technically is at its peak this year. And it's when it goes out, it'll switch with the fourth ray. And then for those of you who are unfamiliar, the fifth ray, which has to do more with, we'll call it, elements of pure science, but mostly about how we think mentally and function in the realm of truth. And you can say, well, those rays are being reinforced, so does that mean that it's easier for us to use those senses that are connected with those centers? And the answer is, it's easier if you are in some way selfish. And I can think of virtually no human beings who aren't. So, yes, we rely upon this factor. And most of other life below human life is relying upon the focus of the rays that they use in terms of their centers. But they don't have all seven of the centers that humans have.
We need to
they
go
have
break.
Some of them, but not all of them. That being the case, we have a unique opportunity and maybe effect from the change from the third ray to the fourth ray, with the third ray peaking this fall right now. And peaking in terms of, it's not going to grow anymore. It's going to start actually going the opposite way. It's going to start shrinking in its effect, particularly when we are selfish. And that means the sense that it governs, which has to do with throat chakra, how we speak to one another, the accuracy of our speech, and whether or not we understand the speech of others, and how we communicate in general with others, because it's really more than speech, it's communication.
You're breaking up a bit. We should go on a break just quickly.
All right. We still have some technical difficulties. We did at the beginning of the show. The engineer is telling me we need to do something about this, so I'm going to get off for another minute, and so he's going to try to see what he can do. To our listeners. Again, I'm 1,000 miles away or so from where the engineer is, and we're trying to put together a show sometimes with difficulty and equipment and other things. and Mother Nature and other things that might happen.
It's still doing the same thing. It's still crackling, but we can live with it, I think.
All right. He says, I'm crackling. I can't hear it, of course, from my side. But for those of you who are hearing some crackling or breaking up in my voice, we're going to try to continue and see what he, if he can do anything. And if not, maybe it'll go away on its own. But let me continue on with what I was saying. And from this point, we'll just, it's going to be touch and go. So, and this, by the way, is an example of what is happening with the third ray. I was about to say, the third ray really controls not just communication, but it controls all elements of what we call civilization, for humans at least, and beyond that, things that we would call technology. So here we are in the midst of a program that's having a technological difficulty, and it's possibly occurring because the senses of someone, maybe who knows where or under what circumstances, or a group of someone's, is coming to play upon the production of the sound of the show. This in no way is to insinuate it's the engineer himself. It could be anybody, because I'm 1,000 miles away. There's all kinds of stuff between me and him. So this is an example of what I'm talking about, that things suddenly don't go the way we would hope them to go, don't go the way we would even expect them to go. And yet, sometimes it's almost illogical, even inexplicable, how it is that something is either working or not working, usually not working, when the third ray starts to shrink. Because different people with their senses at different moments in time may lose some of their sense, not be aware of it, causing untold types of mistakes. All right, so we have an increase in mistakes, sometimes at 100-fold greater levels. When the third ray has reached its peak and starts shrinking. Now, why is that? Why wouldn't it be, well, it's reached its peak, so if it starts shrinking, it's over, it's not going to be any big deal. Well, we adapt very rapidly to getting more and more of this energy to help us to use the sense. And we rely upon it. When it reaches its maximum level, and then it's cut off and starts to diminish. In those circumstances, unless we're thinking really focused out, then it doesn't matter to us. But if we are not and we are selfish, we do not seem to have sufficient information, which is what energy is transmitting to us, from the throat chakra. And the results can be rather devastating in terms of what we call mistakes, and a decline in our ability to communicate, and eventually all kinds of problems become superimposed, sometimes hidden because of the esoteric factor from us about what is really going on. So the bottom line is that if we were looking at what's the real problem right now, the real problem is we don't seem to be able to know the truth from the not truth, and we have a great deal of difficulty communicating with each other, especially in truthful ways, and especially in ways that we would say helps to increase and build our own civilization. Civilization is the ability to use things outside of ourselves to extend our senses. That's the definition of civilization in an esoteric sense. So the interesting thing is that we have this huge problem, yet most people aren't aware that it's happening. Except they can see some of the results. They send out a lot of information to people, and they don't get responses. 10 years ago, they might have gotten all kinds of responses. Now they get nobody responding. They try to coordinate themselves with various people in doing various activities, and it turns out that the situation seems to always have some element of failure associated with it. Mostly because of a confusion about the communication and message itself. In addition, it affects our economy in a very big way because the mistakes that people make causes the economy to shrink and to reduce in its effectiveness because inefficiencies arise everywhere due to mistakes. So, and that doesn't sound too strange, does it? Now, you might have said, well, aren't you just making it up? Because after all, everybody goes, the economy sucks right now, and doesn't matter. Well, you see, I would agree with that if you're only going on what I was saying right now. But this comes from much material that I wrote and taught in the early 1990s about this time. So that kind of, you know, it's a 20-year time period. And so 20 years ago, I predicted most of the things that are taking place right now. That gives me some credence, I guess, to maybe stand on my laurels a little bit, not to get praise or any kind of personal accolade, but more to get people to somewhat believe what I'm saying. Somewhat only in the sense I don't want you to fully believe. I want you to test these things out for yourself in your life. But believe it enough to maybe listen to the show and then to try doing some tests yourself to see if it's true. And some of the tests can be just thinking about your own past and seeing how things have changed in the last few years or not. Okay, so how does that apply to elections and the people getting in or out and that sort of stuff? Well, right now we have a peck of trouble trying to recognize untruthful statements by virtually anybody, and especially by people who are skillful at lying to the point where they virtually are propagandists that spend most of their time spreading lies to convince people of big picture changes that are taking place because of their selfishness and their destructive nature, by making it sound like it's somebody else that's doing it in some other way. And maybe us, the listeners, are responsible. This is the trick of sleight of hand that can be done when this third right is in this unusual position as it is right now. Now, it wouldn't be that bad of a problem if you had really relatively honest politicians, and so that wouldn't be not too bad. We could probably deal with it. The problem is, and as you know, I'm not a fan, by any stretch, of President Barack Obama. Why not? Well, because as a matter of what I believe to be fact-checking, he's a consistent liar. Now, politicians lie. They exaggerate and do many other things that obscure things that they don't like as a way of life. But Barack Obama is a politician all the time and therefore is lying all the time because in his mind, power and control are more important than helping other people to see light and truth. Even worse than that, now these are my opinions, and I don't expect that you should necessarily believe them. But at any rate, the real crux of this situation is that in modern times, we haven't had very many presidents that were on the pathological side of the inability to tell the truth. And he definitely is on that side. Some people would claim he resembles Richard Nixon. But, you know, the weird thing about Richard Nixon was, and I remember him quite well, by the way, although he lied, his lies were manifest about only some things in some way. He probably told the truth more often than he lied. Overall, although at the time I may not have agreed with that statement when he was actually president, because I was pretty much against his nature, probably and mostly because he was a liar. But I think the honest truth, in retrospect, is that he didn't lie all the time. As a matter of fact, he had a side to him that was relatively truthful about areas that he was not threatening and that he didn't seem to have a great deal they need to control. There's some narcissism in maybe the majority of the presidents in the United States. Are really bad thing to have, but nonetheless, it seems to be there. But looking at Barack Obama, he is truly in a psychotherapeutic, psychological diagnosis. I would call him truly a narcissist with fairly strong sociopathic tendencies. I've said this before in a prior show. Now, even that doesn't necessarily mean that he couldn't be president in some respects, even effectively. The real problem is that his way of using his defects in personality and his disorder is to convince people in very strong ways that he isn't like he is, in my opinion, and rather he has a almost pathological, if not a pathological, I would say it is pathological, need to lie. And his lying does have a rational basis. Therefore, you can't say that he's just lying for the sake of lying. He's lying for the sake of manipulation and control and power of others. But he has this at a level that really puts someone like Richard Nixon pretty much to shame. I don't think that, in other words, if you said it, you think of it as a great major accomplishment to be the liar that he is. He may be the greatest of all liars, at least that I know of, presidents, but in the general population, this would be true as well. People in general tend to lie, but they don't lie about the things that are relatively important to others when they've been given a task or have been given the authority to supposedly be responsible for the betterment of others. That's when they lie the least, and President Obama lies the most about those sorts of things. That's what causes me to have a big concern. Now, how does this fit in with the third way? Well, it's easiest for him to get away with this at this day and time. 10-20 years ago, there would be too many people, including the news people, I realize are 100% almost on his side, but there would be too many that would have said, wait a second, he's lying. He said this, this, and this, and 20 other things and 50 other things that are all in contradiction to where he is today. And so since he's, you know, doing that, we would hear about it. But the areas that are most strongly hit about hearing and telling the truth, unfortunately, are the people who are supposed to be the guardians of it, which is the Fourth Estate, or the people who are reporting to us what is taking place in the world around us. That's a major issue. And that has to do with the fourth ray. It's trying to come in while the third ray is going on. This is a struggle. And some of the elements that in the past have kept some people who are journalists from doing what's happening today is that they had very high ethical standards that they may have conveniently used sometimes and not others, but they had the standards nonetheless, which kept them from following a president who has no such standards and who is basically pathological in the way that he lies. So what is going on today is that the third ray going out and the fourth ray trying to come back in has led to the people who are journalists, who normally would be the guardians, falling in line with Barack Obama and attempting to almost deify him, because to them this is a way maybe to let go of some guilt that they feel as a nation about having had slavery and many other prejudicial things that have been done to people of color. So there's this huge, you'll call it almost national identification with there being a need to remedy a past in us that those people who are not necessarily of color, but some that are, from what was true abuse and wrongdoings. But that's so long ago. Many of the people who that were done treated so wrongly are not even alive anymore. And we have to consider that some of the people who were the worst offenders generations ago are today, or were today, born of color themselves. So you see, we're really having some strange things go on without our understanding. So it is a problem, because with that added card in the mix, Barack Obama has managed to basically trigger a anti-white, somewhat black prejudicial movement that he uses, and he also uses other movements as well in similar ways, in order to coalesce certain what we would consider to be minority groups into a majority, very left-wing, certainly socialistic, and probably in most cases communistic, means of seeking power and control. If you've seen the movie 2016, I think most of that movie is accurate. I think Barack's brother, his stepbrother, I guess we would call him, is a fairly interesting character, because he seems to have seen through Barack's illusions and has adopted more of the truth in himself, at least from his, as he self-reported. The fascinating thing about this is that if there wasn't all these changes in the race and everything, the phenomenon we call Barack Obama couldn't have happened, in my opinion. I think there would have been too much resistance. But because the timing is there, and because we don't at the present time have a good sense of truth, people are not seeing the light and are easily misled into darkness. This is such a big factor that we either learn this lesson before next Tuesday, or the majority of people in this country who vote will vote for Obama. And if that were to take place, it won't just be four more years of what has been. It'll be four more years of a true new definition to the United States. It will cease to exist as a free-standing republic. The Constitution will be eroded to almost nothing, which he has said that he would like to do. And in addition, there will be a... it'll be doubtful that the people who seek the truth and light will, in some way or another, continue to function within the sphere of the United States. We may lose a huge amount of population because they'll simply leave. But worse than that, they may be also prevented from leaving. There will be edicts and dictatorial changes such that what we think of today as the United States will cease to exist. I'll give you some examples of what I mean by this. The first would be that Congress will become nothing more than a rubber stamp. The Supreme Court will be marginalized because the lower courts will be challenged to resist moving cases to the Supreme Court. There's ways of preventing most, a lot of them, from reaching up on stage if you have a lot of control over the district, various district courts. Then, in addition, there will be not only record-breaking executive orders, as there has been 900 since Barack Obama has become president virtually every day. But those executive orders will be treated more as rule of law as if it had been passed by Congress and signed by the president. Well, that's a much more dangerous thing than just having a guy who writes the right executive orders. And the overall benefits to the Democrats, and especially Obama, will be beyond our present belief structure, because to them, it will be okay to sidestep the Constitution. Barack Obama, somehow or another, will prepare a way for his remaining in power and as president indefinitely. Far beyond that, there will be such a tremendous erosion of what we call individual rights that you won't be able to recognize what rights they're supposed to be. The main focus of Obama is a thing called anti-colonial communism. But that doesn't have to do so much with the internal function of the United States as it is, as it does in how we interrelate with other countries. He will basically strip this country of most of its autonomy, and the United Nations and other organizations will begin to take control of what we call our rights, our freedoms, etc. You can expect such radical changes that if it didn't happen over months or even years, you would think you had just gone to another world entirely. Now, can we stop it? Well, sure, you could stop it even if we re-elect Obama, but probably not without a civil war of sorts. Now, why do I say that? I mean, wouldn't you stand aside if you were impeached and whatever? First of all, he can't get impeached because the Senate, there won't be enough votes in the Senate to do that. But in addition to the fact, I mean, articles of impeachment could be drawn up by the House to technically impeach him. But he won't be found guilty of charges in impeachment because there's not going to be anyone to find him guilty because the Senate will never vote against him. So it just becomes basically the rule of one man. And truly, he will be the first dictator, if there's going to be any. Now, you might say, well, why do you have such a negative attitude about this guy? I mean, hasn't he done some things? He's a pretty smart guy. He seems like he's kind of congenial and everything else. Well, if you go back to about 1932 in Germany, you almost could say the same thing about Hitler before he was elected chancellor in January of 1933. Many people believed that he was, some kind of coming messiah, that he had great ideas, and that he was telling the truth about most things. They didn't believe he was a bad person. Now, not everybody felt that way, but the point is that he did win an election. He was elected chancellor and eventually took over the whole government within a month or two. But in addition to that, he was believed by the population about the concepts and constructs he thought about the way the world was around him as being true. So they didn't worry about, causing him to, change his ideas about something because he was more radical one way or another. Everybody thought that, well, I shouldn't say everybody, the majority of people thought that Hitler was a pretty cool guy. After all, he gave everybody national pride. He came up with new ways for people to be of service to their government. He basically forced all the wishy-washy people out of government so that he could rule with an iron hand. And don't be surprised if this were to reoccur in the not-too-distant future. with Hitler doing his thing again. I mean, it wouldn't be Hitler, but it would be someone like him. In this case, Barack Obama. Now, Barack Obama is not a Hitler in many other respects, because he has a smarter, smoother, better educated personality than Adolf Hitler had. And I'm not saying all the things I'm saying to try to, oh, gee, now we'll have to deal with the conflict of Hitler between them. No, I'm just trying to get level with all of you listening. At what point changes are going to happen and there's not much we're going to be able to do about it. He recently said a day or two ago that he was going to, by executive order, create a cabinet office of business, Secretary of Business. Well, last time I knew that there was a Secretary of Business anywhere, that was in the Soviet Union. And why would you want a Secretary of Business when, by definition, private business is the kind of society we're supposed to have, not public? Well, that's because, in his mind, that's the opposite of what he wants. He wants a public, he wants many public businesses. And he wants them to borrow and share among themselves and eventually work together in some grand scheme under the Tsar. But, of course, the truth is that anytime you control business, especially if you go into the sides of selfishness or worse, extremes that where you go even well beyond the question of simple function of selfishness, that is a big deal. Now you've got something to be really, really concerned about. And when that sort of thing takes place, it is not easy, because business only can exist as the business we define it as in a free market system. And when you have someone controlling elements of most businesses, the free market goes away. And that's when you end up with all the pitfalls of capitalism. All right, so we can say that in many respects, Barack Obama is preparing the country to become a communist country. Not too different from some definable and self-proclaimed communist governments in Europe as they exist today. But I differ enough from the standpoint that the folks that are going to be in a camp that I would say is clearly dark and evil, people aren't going to be able to see as well as they could in 1932. Why is that? Well, because since that time, propaganda has become much, much, we'll say, smarter. And propaganda is one of the chief arms of evil. So, I mean, evil's gotten better. And the side of good has not gotten better at seeing it. As a matter of fact, it's a little worse. So we have bad set of circumstances coming together. It's like the perfect storm. And that's what's so dangerous about today's world. Okay, so I'm saying that there's going to be a huge upheaval, assuming Barack Obama remains president. And it's going to be extremely dark. And it will have the most negative consequences. And I know that there are people who are very concerned about that. But they don't seem to be headed in the right direction to stop it. The right direction, of course, is not to vote for Obama, but to get others not to vote for him. If you already have, then at least try to nullify your own vote by getting several other people to vote against him. The point is that this is an esoteric truth, not one that you're easily going to see or convince other people of its truth either. That's the bad part. I know you would prefer that someone tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, it's time you got to throw this away, because you'd be beyond this world the situation is getting worse and worse. And so we need to be really examining deeper the surrounding world. Let me give you an example of what I'm saying. You notice I'm going a little longer than the normal time break, because we could get the show going earlier. So. And we will be going maybe a little past 8:30 today, or actually 9:30 for a lot of people, or later, because we're going to add some time into the show. That's the compliments of the radio station itself. But at any rate, so let me think about this. We're going to have, obviously, a 2.5-hour-plus show. The situation is such that at the present time, most folks cannot see the truth. And we have a person who wants to stay in power who promulgates mostly lies. Not just exaggerations, but just down out and out lies. It's just crazy. An example of this is what's happening as we look at the Middle East. You know, Libya is in disarray. And the consulate, ambassador actually, being killed with three other people trying to protect him, et cetera, is a result of a propaganda. The propaganda was that Barack Obama has destroyed the backbone of Al-Qaeda and its associations and associated groups, and there's no more terrorism. And what's left is a mop-up operation that's more like a policing operation than a military one. So the war on terror was thrown away a couple of years ago, even the name. And we're trying to rehabilitate people in Guantanamo, who we know are some ways radical Islamists, but we figured so this is, we can just fix them because we're so good at it. And this is Obama's propaganda. He has been using that propaganda for a couple of years since he got money, since he killed Obama, for a year and a half or so. And so it seems like he has a lot invested in it because he was hoping it would be one of his stepping stones to winning the election. And, you know, and then the inconvenient truth is, we've heard it said in a different way, came popping out. And that's because Obama and his State Department, with the help of Secretary Clinton, were hiding the fact that Al-Qaeda was growing like crazy and had virtually taken over parts of Libya. Well, that's not a good thing, but they couldn't admit to it. So they had to invent stories, invent responses that they had to these negative emails and communications from the ambassadors that, hey, things are real bad. Can you get some more Marines here? Can you do this or that? Stop the situation? And he said, what situation are you talking about there? Hey, there's nothing wrong with what's going on there because that can't be true. We have made friends with these people. There aren't any real terrorists around you. They're just some disgruntled folks who might occasionally do a demonstration, not like something. We can handle that, can't we? And he says, no, we can't handle it because that's not what's happening. He keeps sending these communications. This is, you guys are must be smoking some here. This is not what's going on here. Al-Qaeda is, like, growing leaps and bounds by the day, and I'm afraid I'm going to get killed. Oh, you're just exaggerating. Well, listen, I'm afraid he's going to get killed. Oh, my. Oh, our buddies over there would kill you. They're just a little confused. But they're not going to hurt you. Yeah. And then the worst of things happened. Yeah, they made a attack that was deliberate and prolonged, and they killed the ambassador and other people, brave people. And so, then what? Uh-oh, we better invent a story. And so they made up a nice story. Oh, this guy at the internet, he came out with this goof. Oh, it's a terrible goofy thing. But
you might want to go break.
I think, okay. I'm hearing I might want to go on break at this moment. I will. We're still having problems, I guess, on the line. We're going to see if we can do something about it. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, maybe longer. I'm not sure from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We're still working with our technical difficulties. Hopefully, I sound a little better. We're working at it. All right. So, this is a series of lies based upon an original plan of propaganda. Now, the propaganda is a series of lies designed to fool people into believing something that is absolutely untrue about the government and its leader. And in this case, that's exactly what Obama was doing in his approach about Al-Qaeda. And it was just very inconvenient that towards the end of the election campaign, the whole thing blew up on him. So then he said, well, I'll double down on the lies. I'll tell everybody that it was this other guy's crazy video that caused the problem, when it's come out that that's a complete lie, of course. And then he sends out his hacks to go out and say, oh, yeah, it was the video, it was the video. And then he himself gets on the air and says, it was the video. He says, oh, yeah, it's the poor video. It goes in front of the United Nations a couple of weeks after this whole terrible thing happens. And he tells them he apologizes. He apologizes to Pakistan and buys airtime of Pakistan to convince, not Pakistan, but people in the United States that he's telling the truth. It really was a terrible crowd angered by a terrible video on the Internet that nobody seems to have heard about or seen. And this is what caused a riot, and then it wasn't any of that. That was all a lie. And this is how propaganda can eventually collapse. But in Obama's case, he's so skillful as a liar that literally the day after he's been lying for 2 weeks, he just changed his story. He even went so far as the last week. He said, well, you know, I actually gave the order to stop with all that stuff. When did he give the order to and to whom? And why didn't he tell us a month and a half ago about it? You know, it's kind of a weird thing, but, you know, people want to believe him. They just want to. Yeah, I mean, he could say, well, actually the Pope told me to do it. And once the Pope said it, I had to kind of placate the guy. I mean, he could make up any story he wants. And there's close to half of our population who will buy it today. Why? Because of the third pay problem. And that many people are being affected all the time. Well, this is a serious issue. Because what we're really talking about is propaganda is the method that evil is using in this world to grow itself in a relatively unique way. It's doing some things that it hasn't ever done anywhere near this galaxy, and maybe not ever anywhere, which would be amazing. And Earth is an experiment. There's some permissiveness allowing evil to do this to see if Earth and some of the braver souls that are here can figure out ways of overcoming this evil, which is really more mental than astral. Most evil everywhere is astral, but very little of it is mental. The reverse is now becoming true on Earth. So we have a large amount of mental evil, which is what we call, part of it is the propaganda. And therefore, I'm saying that the President of the United States is functioning in accord with evil. And that's a real serious claim. It's a real serious thing. Is that esoteric? It has to be, because I don't think too many people think that way, although more and more, there are some. And is it because I just don't like the guy? No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that he is a propagandist at the most highest level. He makes Hitler and Goebbels from a couple of generations ago seem like kids trying to get out of a small little tisk that they had got themselves into in comparison to what he lies about now and the frequency of it and the dearth of lies from one point to the next is incredible. Most people in 1932 would have believed you could get away with that level of lying. They would have been hesitant to attempt to do so because the house of cards could always come down. But today, with the lack of sense issue in the communication realm, you could almost get away with anything. And I think that presently we're seeing that. It's a very frightening thing. I don't like talking about it in the ways that I am doing so frankly, because I, first of all, in the minds of most people who are in illusion, in my opinion, they think I'm a nutcase. Oh, that guy's on the radio, the President of the United States is not a crook like Nixon, he's just an evil dude. Well, he's really crazy. Yeah, well, that's kind of true. I think Nixon was a little bit on the criminal side, but probably wasn't evil. I don't think Obama's exactly a criminal. I think he's evil. It's a big difference. Criminals tend to take things for their own gain, and they seek it for something usually in a tangible realm. But evil seeks to be destructive for the sake of power and control. So it can take power and control from others and control them. And that's the side that I see the present administration on. It's not just Obama, by the way. I mean, he's got huge numbers of people. Their names are I've said it many times. I'm not going to name them all tonight, but he's gone through, I mean, just about everybody you could find who wants to control things. I don't care if they're heads of unions or if they're SEIU or if they're this or that or they are members of the Communist Party or they, whatever. These are people who live their life to control others. And they try to convince each other. I don't know how well they convince the rest of us, but they convince each other that they're doing it because the others just don't know how to live their lives. They know. They got it. Mostly, they don't believe in God. And so that's another very interesting part of this example. Oh, I know. Barack Obama goes to church. That doesn't mean he believes in God. It means he believes that other people need to think he does. That's part of the propaganda. If he's any religion at all, I would put him in strongly into the Muslim world of radical Islam or semi-radical Islam. But I don't even think that's probably true. I think that is another facade. But he has a stronger leaning towards that as a religion. Again, maybe from the social issues of Sharia for those who are radically inclined, and that's probably where he falls more. Not because he truly believes in Sharia law, but because he believes in anything that gives men in particular and him as one of those, they have near absolute authority over everybody. His war on women that he projects onto Romney, that's really him. It's a fascinating issue. You might say, well, he gets along with his wife pretty good. You know, I mean, they're cool. Well, she has a complementary personality. If she didn't, I don't think she would have stayed with him so long. And, I mean, I believe they're probably made for each other, you know, truly. And there's no question that, you know, they're probably going to continue to be a team. That's for sure. Okay, so in looking at this whole circumstance, we are really in trouble because so many people are being fooled by propaganda and can't really tell the truth, tell what the truth is, I should say. And this has caused a major change in the voting positions of people. In the past, although the media has been predominantly Democratic, it hasn't ignored the truth 100% in order to get a president elected. That's no longer the case. And I'm not talking about every element of the media. I'm just talking about the majority elements of the media. And so they're playing a very big role in not getting the truth out. They're making sure it won't get out. I mean, they're censoring the news so that only the propaganda gets out, and anything that will challenge the propaganda, they bury. All right. There's a few, very few people in the media that are not doing it, but it's a very small percentage compared to 95% plus who are. And most people are getting their news from sources that are traditionally much more on the Democrat side, I should say. Okay, so when we look at this from a perspective of what's coming up. On Tuesday, we have the official election day, but people are voting right now. Many people are doing early voting. And so voting is going on as I speak. How does this play out? Well, if you listen to a few of the diehards, like Dick Morris, etc., they think that the people who haven't yet committed
to vote for either Obama or Romney at this late date will either not vote or they'll vote for Romney. And that will put him over the top in majority of the places where he's close to winning, but isn't. It's a possible theory. It might work. There is something, though, that is troubling in his theory. And that is that his theory is based upon years past, going back to 2004 and 2000, and before that. Before the third-rate problem had reached its maximum level, as it is right now. And so the level of illusion in people was not as great. The amount that people were, we'll say, told lies that they believe was much less. And therefore, you know, you could fool them once or twice, but they eventually got the message. Today, I don't know, and I almost am certain that that isn't the truth. The truth is something different, and let me tell you what the differences are. It isn't going to encourage anybody, I think. But the truth is today that the level of propagandized illusion, mental illusion, has become significantly worse because people are much more egotistical than they were 15 years ago or so. And it's a particularly serious level of egotism, with some even further being much worse than arrogance. And those folks are tipping the scales in the opposite direction. Now, what is egotism? Egotism is believing that your thought is right, and other people's thoughts are basically wrong. Right? That's what egotism is. And that your thought is right to the point and or your following behavior of a thought shouldn't be challenged before you challenge other people feeling made mistakes, other things causing problems rather than yourself. And the difficulty there is that it isn't that you won't eventually figure out the truth. It's just that you won't do it in time before next Tuesday. You might, by a year from next Tuesday, and say, how did I ever vote for this guy? He just took away our gun rights. He just decided that there is a new secretary of business who is telling people they have to get a license from the federal government even be in business, and that license does a test on them about whether or not they are true Americans and follow the way of the Communist Party in the United States. It won't be called Communist, it will be called the Progressive Party of Future Business. But at any rate, so they're going to be, this is going to be a whole new reign of terror. And it will be set up by executive order. Then the other things that we're going to see that are going to cause real serious problems is that the EPA, the FDA, and most other of the regulatory agencies that already have very heavy hands will just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze all many different types of businesses to the point where they will be taken over easily by what we'll call a communist form of socialism. Now, socialism is where the government takes over major industries, but not all industry. Communism, the government takes over all industry and does so with violence and force if necessary. So there's a big difference between the two. I'm talking about something somewhat in between, but definitely has the element of communism in it. All right. So when we look at this from that standpoint, this is downright terrible. And a year from now, people will be looking and saying, what happened? Where was I? Did I actually vote for that guy a second time? Yeah. And it'll be too late. Egotism slows up greatly the process of finding the truth. It does not eliminate it. Arrogance does. Once a person reaches arrogance, they actually want to harm people. and they want to control people, so they're on the side of the universe. But egotism doesn't do that. It just slows the process of coming to it. The light takes forever if it, you know, if it's going to reach the person, it takes forever. Come on. All right, that's a big problem, isn't it? And Earth is now in the contested range of planets where we're doing the test. If Obama's reelected, chances of us losing the test probably 80-90%. Not because the United States is the only place on Earth that has a big stake in things and controls things, but because Obama is not the president of the United States. He's trying to become the leader of the world. He would much rather be elected president of the world by the United Nations than act as president in the capacity as he is, has been so doing in the United States. He is looking for the opportunity to do this. And everybody says, well, he could only stay in another 4 years. Well, there's always his wife and he's got daughters. I mean, he could stay in a long time if you think about this from, as the old model of kingship. But he also could stay in if he changes the laws of our country to the point where you wouldn't even recognize it, and he just becomes leader of some other thing. We'll call it the United Nations of Progressive World Order, and runs the world from that position. And the United States is just a putty to him in his hands and becomes whatever he chooses it to be. Don't think that can happen? Oh, wait. Now, it's important to realize at this point that the things I'm saying are examples in conjecture of what can happen. They are not prophecies of what will happen. I'm drawing these examples so that you can see the concepts, not trying to prophesize. But again, if you were to look at my averages, they're pretty high in terms of prophecy, if you wanted to use that as a guideline. I don't want you to, because prophecy eliminates some of the truth finding that you need to find yourself. So I don't want you to buy into that kind of logic. You can find out most of the stuff for yourself and just listen to what I have to say and use that as a means of investigation. That same reasonable, it does to me. Maybe it will to you as well. Okay, so where do we digress to from the point if Obama is reelected? Well, the other part that will be severely damaged, he's already done this, will be the diminishment of the other two parts of government. You can just about bet that there will be almost no bills passed. There will be almost nothing done in Congress, which is what he wants. Everybody thinks, well, why would he want Congress to go along with him? He doesn't want an all-Democratic Congress. He had that for 2 years. He didn't use it very effectively. It doesn't give him the power. He wants divided Congress. He wants a Congress that is immobile. Because he's not here to get his laws passed. If he wanted that, he could have got a lot more laws passed the first 2 years. He's here to take over, to control, and to change a free market, free country, into one of slaves, his slaves, and those of his cohorts. And that's what I'm saying. Now you could say, oh boy, you know, the Secret Service is going to come knocking on your door. You're going to be in big trouble. Probably right. I don't fear that because this isn't, I mean, if that's what would happen, then we know Obama has done all the things I said and more. If the Secret Service could come knock on my door for the things he's not saying, because the First Amendment is gone, et cetera. I mean, it is true. If you promulgate and state that you want to go off and do harm, physical harm, to the president or even other people in the government, the government has a right to go after you because that threat can be taken as a serious one. And it doesn't mean that they can necessarily, in today's world, lock you up. But probably in tomorrow's world, they could. But regardless, what I'm doing is none of that. I'm not expressing a violent response. I'm trying to get people to think and change the way that they understand and see so that they see more truth. Truth is, to me, the most important thing in their mind. Now, will that lead to a different outcome on Tuesday? Well, I don't think this show in and of itself is going to do much of anything in that respect. It's more a reporting of, right now, esoteric elements and things about metaphysical and spiritual realities. But it does, at least, give people some pause. And people will listen to this show if the worst happens, maybe avoiding even more worse things after. It'll be available in archive. Now, what's the chances of Romney winning? Romney and Ryan winning? Well, pretty good from the standpoint that Ryan's a pretty high-level thinker initiate. Romney's a good man. And maybe not quite as high in terms of some of the things that he's willing to give up to stand for freedom. I think he would compromise some of those things, but way, way better than the President Obama regime. And so there's a possibility enough people will see that. And that's without listening to anything I'm saying. I'm talking about that they'll just come to this conclusion on their own. I think in some places that may be happening. I just don't know if there's enough time and if the message is getting through because of the media. And the last thing is if Romney has enough, we'll say, of the gumption necessary to stand up and speak his mind. And I'm, you know, I say this in straight honesty. I think that at times he does, and at other times he says, well, I guess I did enough of that, you know, save my mind. I'll just stick to this speech here. That will get me through. But I don't think in the face of all the lies, you can get by just by putting your head down and saying. And there's some parts of Romney that does that. I think Ryan doesn't, but Ryan's not running for president. He's running for vice president. He has to support who and what Romney is at this time. And that's just the way it is. Do I think they have a chance? Yes. I wish they would do a little bit more of the straight up, this is what we think, talk. Most of you know that he hasn't brought up much of anything that's going on in Libya. I think that it's some kind of belief that it will make him look bad. You know, like, say something bad about the president. You know what, you just might be a good guy. It's too much like John McCain, in my opinion. Sometimes you just got to say the truth as the truth, and if it looks bad on you, it's going to look a lot worse than the person you're saying it about. And you got to take your lumps. And I think that because of the women's vote and other things, single women's vote, there's been some suggestion to Romney to play it real safe. But I think that most people win the big parts of life, not because they play it safe, but because they take some kind of times enormous risks. That it's required to get some people necessary to see the truth. And so we'll see how this whole thing turns out. I'm thinking that Romney has a chance of winning because of the Morris model, but I'm not so sure that the model has built into it the radically different world we're living in from the time earlier of when it would have made sense to you. We'll just have to see. I certainly want and hope that Romney and Ryan win, because it'll give them a chance to undo some of the evil darkness that's out there. And freedom is what's at stake in the bottom line of the whole situation. I want to talk about the two different modes of thinking between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats lean towards the side of what's called the second way. That's the second part of God's thought. God's thought together makes spirit of heaven. And when it's along the same kind of thought that God thinks in, then it's enlightened thought, enlightened spirit. That's a good thing. Right? At the present time, there's a tremendous differences between the Democrats and the Republicans, because the Democrats tend to lean towards the side of consciousness and love and inclusiveness. And the Republicans lean towards the side of freedom and creativity. And some people would call, say, purpose and sacrifice. The two sides together is what you're really looking for, and that produces an enlightenment. It leads to a fully spiritual component. And the reason you don't have that happening is because the polarization comes from the desire for control and power, not for what each of the two sides actually represent. And so we have this crazy system now that the Democrats lean over and want more, we'll say, government and help from the government. And I'm not talking about bad Democrats, I'm talking about good ones. And then the people who are Republicans want freedom from the government, because they remember from the Constitution and elsewhere that government basically, as it becomes bigger, becomes less free. It looks to control, and it takes over. They learned that from the forefathers who wrote that in many, many different ways. How do you bring these two together, then, so that you can get something done, as they say? But the way to get them together is to take the positive elements of both, and it makes a balanced spiritual being. You're eliminating it. You include both, but you make sure that their levels are equal, even when you disagree with the other side. You want equality, because in equality, the struggle to find truth is much more pronounced. And over time, the things you do want to get done will get done in fairness and correctness. And the few that don't, you'll easily recognize and be able to change or eliminate those things that are harmful. It makes every bit of sense what I'm explaining. And so, how do you do this in an esoteric sense? Because obviously it doesn't work in exoterically. Well, part of it is obviously Barack Obama's fault, and his cohorts. They want the dissension because it leads to them gaining the power and control. But that aside, long before they existed, there was this problem with the Republicans and the Democrats. It's been going on for quite a long time. Occasionally they work together, most of the time they do. What do we need to do to change this? Well, I've already proposed the changes that are necessary. We need about maybe 10 changes to the Constitution. I mean, that many new kinds of amendments to lead to a government that is slightly restructured towards greater freedom and a higher social responsibility without the kind of bullshit stuff if it's involved with social justice. I know I'm not supposed to say that word, but I'll call it bullshit sense. How's that? The thing that goes on with that is that it's used as a means to an end of control and damage to other people, and it's real evil. So social justice and anything related to social justice is evil. Why? Well, because you take the Democratic side of wanting to care about people, love and consciousness, perfectly good things, and you introduce the desire to control others by forcing people to all be the same. Wait, if everybody's the same, then there is no development of individuality. And the lack of individuality, by definition, is one of the three or four things that evil seeks. It is weird. Evil wants to control, and it pretends that it's doing so that others can be individuals, while it removes all element of individuality from them and forces people to be slaves. So you don't want slavery. You want the opposite. Social justice leads to slavery, and it is a form of communism. And it is a means of the evil people to become powerful. So it's almost always used by evil people. It isn't the only way, but it's a biggie. It has been used for literally a couple hundred years now. All right, so we're looking at this thing. How do we bring this together so that the Democrats and the Republicans are going to work together? You're going to have independent folks. You're going to have libertarians. Libertarians tend to side with the Republicans, but more towards the freedom side, instead of, we'll call it, the creative purpose side. They want freedom, even if it costs people purpose. And in a weird way, Republicans want purpose, even if it costs some people freedom. Let me give an example of that so that you can see it. If you ask a libertarian, most libertarians will say that you should not govern individual behaviors, personal behaviors. So if they don't cause harm to the general, other people's good, public will call it. So they should be able to not only smoke marijuana, but probably use heroin and do whatever else they want to with other substances and drugs. And you have laws against any behaviors that come from those use of drugs to the point where you can possibly restrict damage to others from that. But you won't be as good and controlled if you restrict the drugs themselves, but they think it's a pretty good compromise if they're a libertarian. But they're saying it's more important to be free than to have purpose to their lives. So people should be free to take drugs and do all kinds of terrible things to themselves, as well as to their family and friends and even strangers, because freedom is absolutely the first and most important thing. But what about this idea of purpose? What about the idea that there could be a collective purpose, that people don't want to cause harm to each other, they want to make sure that everybody can be as free as possible, but maybe not free, completely free, because complete freedom may mean that we can't live together because some people are going to be doing things that are crazy. It's going to be difficult for others to deal with their harmful behaviors. That's the argument somewhat against libertarianism, but libertarianism has some great good ideas, and some of them have become part of the conservative, we call it, people movement. On the Democratic side, they want people to be loving and to have a opportunity to, we'll say, live a life in a creative way. They want the first right, but they think they can get it by making sure that everybody has enough opportunity. Well, what is enough opportunity? Is it getting into colleges that they can't pass the exams on? Is it maybe not even to pay any taxes? Is it maybe the government giving them a check for nothing? Because they just live and breathe. Is it maybe in some fashion, because there's guilt in people's minds from earlier times when people of a certain race or group were mistreated? Those reasons are not good because they substitute for real love a kind of false love that makes other people feel better that they're giving, even though the giving is incredibly unwise and very destructive to everyone, especially the person being given to. Oh. So the test there has to be that you make people more wise in their giving, if you're giving anything to them, and any time you cease to do that, then you're making a mistake. That would virtually end all ideas of social justice, by the way. And it would get rid of the idea that you can somehow make up for our forefathers' indiscretion, terrible ways of dealing with people, even slavery, by today having the reverse kind of prejudice applied to people of other color or non-color, so that the people who have color now prejudicially are given things to compensate for what happened 50, 100, 150 years ago. You can't do that. And if you understand esoteric elements, you would realize that some of those folks used to be the white folks that were the slave people. They kept the slaves. And then they got reborn as a black person sometime after. Or some other, we'll say, biased against color-skinned person. You see, this whole thing is just, you can't deal with it from the vantage point that we would like to. That's called personal giving. Personal giving has great deals of, we'll say, wrong giving. Giving that has no redemptive value other than to make slaves out of other people. Terrible. Terrible. Okay, so where does this lead to? Where do we find ourselves in a position now where the two sides are against each other? Well, they need to change some laws, honestly. It can be done because there have been so many ways that evil has worked our government that they found all the cracks and all the ways around. I mean, after all, the Constitution, like 16 pages, it couldn't cover all the ways the government had to be restricted in a more complex world, which is where we are now, where evil has grown and people have become more egotistical. That world from hundreds of years ago was a simpler place. More time was taken to do things. And propaganda was almost impossible because the means of communication was too slow. Propaganda depends upon very fast communication. It won't work when it takes weeks or months to communicate something to people who live too far away. So that's the reason it's a new invention now. The laws that I've suggested change have to do with areas that you hear about almost every day. Should we always have a balanced budget? Yeah. What about in times of war? Well, only if it's a declared war and the Congress is in the middle of battle. Not some crazy war that the president decides to do or someone else. And so, you need to have some kind of sensible ideas about that sort of thing. And what about how much taxes we should pay? Well, I think that could be based upon real number GDPs, maybe from three independent sources or three sources even in the government, like the GAO, but maybe three different kinds of GAO, so that you don't have any one that could ever take over all of them, or control them in some fashion. And as long as your percentage is of GDP, then your taxation could support a free market system. When does taxation destroy free market systems? Somewhere around 20% on a federal level, and on a gross level, about double that. So if more than 40% of a person's income is totally taken in taxes, the free market system starts to collapse, and governments go into what are known as cyclical bubbles and recessions and depressions and things like that. Especially when you have people trying to control a system where taxation is too great. That means government is too big, by the way. So I would suggest that maybe between 10 and 15% be the size of government based upon GDP. And that's the federal government. And that the collective taxes can never be more than double that on any people. So if it's 15%, then you can't have more than 30% of total taxation. Well, who's going to build all the roads? You know, and who's going to build this? Well, that's why you have private industry. That's why you don't have the government doing everything for you. The government could still build some roads. I don't see a problem with that. But they're probably not going to be offering you the health care situation. The more there is free enterprise, the cheaper things get, the more competition is involved. And regulation becomes less necessary because it's usually governed by competition. You also have to have laws against monopoly, though, because monopoly is where competition is destroyed by excessive power being employed in a certain field or part of a market. But that we already have, and we can even strengthen those. That's a big problem. Can we live with 10 to 15% and a total of, say, 20 to 30% taxation on everybody? Sure. We would prosper immensely. Prosperity would grow immensely in that kind of environment. Regressive taxes should be gotten rid of. What are regressive taxes? Well, sales taxes on things that are everybody has to have doesn't make any sense because those things hurt people with less money disproportionately. Doesn't seem right. It's anti-progressive. It's the opposite. But it is, unfortunately, the norm in this country. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know who came up with that craziness, but that's pretty weird. So sales taxes are not usually good unless they don't include the necessities of life. Some places have tried to do this. They don't tax food, they don't tax drugs. I live in a state like that, by the way. But it isn't enough. They don't go far enough. And sales taxes, where I'm living, is nearly 10%. Well, that's ridiculous. Because if you take the total taxation, then we're way over from a total of 40%. Some people are paying 70%, 80% in taxes. That doesn't make any sense. It stops people from being creative when 80% of their effort is being punished. And then if you take into account the death tax, that really kills families and business family groups. And it destroys the integrity of the family. It's another way to erode one of the most important things in our country, and that is strength of families. Families build up personal issues to be tested so that people can eventually get beyond them and become more themselves. They aren't there to destroy people by having personal conflicts. They're there to work them out. It's one of the ways designed in human nature to work them out. When the family structure disintegrates, you lose a very important asset to eventually getting over personal issues. And then people become miserably entrapped as adults in personal issues and sometimes personality disorders. That's what happens when you don't have good families. All right, so looking at the next part of what I see would be helpful, I think. I suggested that in a prior show, it might be beneficial to get rid of the system that we changed from and make a hybrid of it. The present system is that we choose our senators based upon popular vote, because people thought that would be cool if it had more power, you know. But it eliminated too much of the strength of the states in the process. The state legislatures used to select them. I suggest a hybrid of that system. We're flipping back and forth in each election. One of the two senators' positions becomes elected by the state legislature, and the other position by popular vote. A hybrid. Yeah. So we'd have 50 senators at the present time. 50 states, 50 senators selected by popular vote in their state, and 50% selected by the legislature of that state. That would kind of change the perspective of a lot of senators. And they would become not only concerned about getting reelected from people in their state, obviously, and also the national issues, but they would be concerned about their state issues more. And that would give more strength. It would be less tendency to erode the power of states. So why is that important? Because the states limit the power of the national government. And if you don't have federated states that have more power effectively together with the federal government, then the federal government eventually will become dictatorial, which is what it is becoming. And the states become diminutive in their ability to achieve much of some level of autonomy. Especially this is true of Obama. He's really gone after the 10th Amendment and other parts of the Constitution. All right, so looking at the process, that would be something I would consider. I would think it would be pretty important. I also think it's probably worthwhile to consider having more people on the Supreme Court and a different kind of voting structure. One possibility might be you can have 12 people. You can have, more than that, even. If you had 12 people, you would need a vote of 7-5 to carry, instead of a vote at the present time of 5-4. Now, why is 7-5 better if you had 12 people? Well, because you got to have 2 people who are voting in the majority. Otherwise, you would end up with a 6-6 tie. And a 6-6 tie would end up to be no decision at all in the court that I'm suggesting. And that's a kind of strange idea, isn't it? I know that's a strange idea. But you could have decisions that the Supreme Court can't make at the present time because it doesn't truly have a majority opinion. And this also makes it less politically advantageous to stack the court and other factors. So it's something to think about. I'm not saying that we have to change it that way. That's about something to consider. Would be kind of worthwhile. There's a number of other areas that I would definitely strengthen. I would from taking over by force as easily as it does in countries where it's taking guns away from people, or weapons in general. And so this is due to the first order of business in the government that wants to control everybody isn't taking guns away. Taking guns away doesn't mean you can't own a gun. It means you can't have access to it. People in some countries own guns, but they're locked away miles away, and they can't use them. Access to a gun is important. Not because guns are safe. They aren't. But because guns prevent people from using guns against them for either political or criminal reasons. And they may not prevent it, or at least they obscure or obstruct, I should say, that use. And the fear has to be of the government, not of the people, because the people are the source of all power and control to the government, and the source, the original source of power and control came from the creator, not from the government. That should be in a constitutional amendment as well. I realize it's part of the Declaration of Independence, but I think it would be better to make it clear, or clearer, in the Constitution itself. Not that it isn't referred to, just that it would be much clearer. Does that mean everybody has to believe in a religion or God? No. It just means that the majority of people do in this country, and by the majority decision, they believe that the Creator endowed them with certain inalienable rights. That's it. Makes sense? I think it does. Okay. What would be some of the other areas that I would be concerned about? Well, there's so many. There are actually, I didn't name more than this in other shows. I don't want to get bogged down in just this one area. But I'm trying to show that we do need to make some changes, probably, if we're going to have less evil, more open-mindedness, and better cooperation between the parties. And that seems to be the ticket towards a successful society. And much more limited government by controlling the purse strings. Government doesn't have money, it doesn't have power. Kind of works out pretty good, right? Yeah, I would think so. All right, there's a lot of other things in that area we could get into, but we'll let that be for right now, because I want to continue on. We've got, maybe about 45 more minutes. So I want to make sure that we touch on all the esoteric elements so that at least by the end of the show, you will say, well, maybe that guy is in favor of Romney, but at least he isn't a crazy guy. He's got some ideas, that maybe work out, possibly. All right. So then what is the general position about the executive branch that we need to be concerned about? Well, we already saw that evil has gotten skillful enough through propaganda to be able to use the executive branch as a dictatorial regime. So that has to stop. Now, how do you stop that? Well, I would make all positions in government that have any advisory role, any role at all that deals with the president, they have to go through Congress, and I would limit the president to no more than maybe 10 or 12 or 15 experts that we call, the people supposedly who aren't elected but are there to advise him. Only a couple of them actually go through any kind of senatorial process. I would eliminate any potential for law being passed while Congress is not in session. That's gone. That's just nonsense. So any lame duck measures are gone. You've got to have Congress in session, and Congress tells the president when they're in session, not the president decides on his own. Executive orders. No executive order can be done for more than 3 months without the approval of Congress. And for 3 months, the executive order has to be put before Congress or it's automatically repealed, cannot be reenacted again for another year. That would be my opinion. Executive orders are extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. I think Obama's in the 900s or something. Just nutso. Just nutso stuff. I mean, you look at how things have turned out and you say, gee, this is like goofy. Why would free people want this kind of stuff going on, right? I would eliminate some of the parts of government, the United States federal government, that are best done on local levels. Why do we have a Department of Education? I mean, what, we got teachers coming from the Department of Education teaching our schools? No. Nonsense. Education should be at the most fundamentally local level possible. There should be freedom and vouchers and a way of supporting things. Unions should have no power to decide who or what is going to teach kids. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. It's okay for them to say they want more money, but I'd say they have the power to control what they're going to teach and how they're going to teach it and when and where. Come on, this is nuts. But that's just one thing. It's not that one thing that really is most concerning. The biggest thing is to reduce the control of the entire executive section by reducing the ability to regulate and control almost anything. Unless it is truly, truly dangerous to large numbers of people and there has been a proven inability for industry or agencies, private agencies, private people, to act in their own behalf. I'm not talking about one or two instances. I'm talking about a consistent problem. And the government, even when it comes in with that, it has to have a sunset law. They can only control it every 5 years, and then they have to go back to Congress. They have to try to see, you know, maybe this agency is too much. And maybe we've curbed the problem. We don't need it as much anymore. The idea is everything should be limited. And, of course, it would be with the kind of financing I'm talking about. The money, the government would only have, what, a maximum of 15% of GDP, maybe down to 10. You're not going to be able to have every agency under the sun controlling everybody. It's not going to happen. Nobody's going to be able to afford it. I would let most of the people that are in government go, but not by firing them. You just start an attrition thing based upon when somebody retires. No federal position. Not to fire people. You'd be surprised how many people retire every year. And before long, you're going to be down to the numbers that I was talking about in percentage of GDP. And if you don't have a lot of people working in government, especially in the executive branch, which is the biggest danger of all the branches, its ability to control and shape people's lives diminishes rapidly. Yeah. What about things like the military? Everybody's got a big thing about the military. Some people want more, some people want less. You know, the best way to look at this is, why don't we figure out the best way to fight and win 25 different kinds of wars or 50 different kinds of wars or skirmishes or kinds of actions? And use that as a model for determining the size and needs of a military based upon these specific forms of action. You didn't know that they don't do that? They did at one time, a long time ago. Yeah, they don't do that today. I know, it doesn't make much sense, right? They used to have only one thing. Well, we have to be able to fight two wars at the same time in two different locations. Now it's down to one, by the way. But it doesn't make any sense. That doesn't really tell you what you need to win the war and how you win the war. And that's the reason why we don't. That's where that comes in between the executive side of government, where the military is controlled, and you should have some planning side of government where it's expended upon from Congress. Congress should have a more active role in determining how the military actually functions. The oversight should be about whether or not this is helping to secure the United States and other interests of the United States, but necessarily not of people of the United States. Part of our interest should be freedom. We should have a basis of defending freedom wherever it is, and going after and preventing those things that destroy freedom wherever it is, and to make sure that while you're defending freedom, you're not increasing the amount of crazy radicals who are destroying not only freedom, but all life, who are evil. Which is the present administration's policy. Where did they come up with that? Well, when you're that dark, as they are dark, they have no idea who the enemy is. They really don't know. If they saw the enemy, they would see themselves. They might even stop doing what they're doing. I know that sounds strange, but it's true, in my opinion. So these elements are so critical if we're going to try to change the way that we are going about who we elect. There is almost nothing that I have said that is part of Obama's plan for this country. Almost none of it. He sometimes says some things in propaganda which are reversed 50 different ways at other times, and he never does anything. There's long lines that I'm saying. What about things like pollution and stuff like that? I mean, shouldn't we all be concerned about the environment and taking care of it? Good stewards? Yeah, we should. But not the way that President Lee is handled. The present way is that the government is against business interests that contaminate and destroy, and other silly people who might do so on a more individual basis. That's their present attitude. The better attitude is the government's position is to educate and to consult with and help people to find better ways of running their businesses and living their lives so they're not hurting anybody. If the government thinks they are, and if independent parties outside of the government agrees with the government's position. Otherwise, you give so much authority to people to start business. That's exactly what they do. And individuals sometimes. People who own land and want to do certain things. Oh, you can't do that. You're going to put too much dust in the air. Well, there's going to be some dust in the air, yeah. What about all the food I'm going to make? What about all this I'm going to do? What about all that? And why do you have to do it without putting any dust in the air at all? Well, that's going to be so expensive I can't do anything. Well, that's too bad, but maybe you should go work for someone else, then. You see, that's the present attitude. That's crazy. That's all stuff that's nuts. So basically, regulatory agencies should become educational agencies and consulting agencies and only have, at the very, very last necessary, a regulatory effort, but then it has to be checked by others, not by self-regulation of themselves. Or craziness. We know best. You have to assume they don't because we're all egotistical. And nobody's more egotistical than the person who's in power. Give them power and they'll do anything they want to do. Again, I remind you, there's virtually nothing in the present administration that resembles anything of what I'm describing. And these things are based upon esoteric truths. They're not just based upon my own, like, oh, gee, I'm a Republican, so I'm going to say this or that. I'm not a Republican, actually. If there's any side I lean towards, it would be a little bit more towards the libertarian. But I see goodness in all the three things, three sides, four sides, five sides that I've presented. And all these different ways of looking at things are okay. They're not like terrible. The terrible side is the side of evil. The side of those that want to destroy life, want power at any cost, even if it is to destroy life. In many cases, they want to destroy life, which is really weird. Then you get into, whoa, bad person. Bad, bad person. Okay, so how does Romney and Ryan and those kind of folks, the Tea Party folks, and some of the libertarians, and all, how do they all stack up against the president's administration? Well, in every case that I brought up, they will do a better job. I'm not saying they're going to get everything right now. I don't think they'll adopt half of what I said, or even maybe a tenth. The point is that they're not going to do the bad stuff, the really bad stuff. They'll make mistakes, and they may not be as bold. But at least they'll do some of that. The other thing that would be best is to limit the amount of progressive issues in taxation. As you know, the progressives, of which Bob claims he's one, want to have strongly progressive income tax to redistribute wealth. But if your goal in taxation is to redistribute wealth, that is communism. Whereas if your goal in taxation is to pay the least amount to do the most amount of good that government can do, you don't want to redistribute wealth. You want to create more and more wealth for all people, reducing the taxes on everybody and reducing the size of government to the lowest level necessary for the people's protection and benefits, but never at the cost of their independence or their ability to be conscious and inclusive and work together. Makes sense? That's me. All right, so we've got that as a paradigm. And there's no question that right now in this election, that's where people are, that's what they're really deciding, except most people don't know that's what they're voting on. They think they're voting on a guy who smiles really good. And some women, because he has a thing called a first-rate astrobody, some women think he's hot stuff. I don't know. What's that? But the point is, they're voting for very strange reasons. They're also voting because they believe in the intellectually elite. Obama was no great student. He wasn't a great teacher either. But the thing is that he acts like he is an intellectual, pompous person. Oh, he pretends to be on the side of the people. As long as he controls them and regulates them and takes all their money and redistributes everything to everybody that he wants to redistribute to, as long as everybody's slave is a slave. He just chooses what and when he wants to do with whomever he needs to do it to. That's a scary place. All right, so we got this, we'll say, comparison. And we have an election which is in progress right now. In the process, it's happening. And we will be finalized on Tuesday, or May at the latest, maybe Wednesday morning, unless it goes on with the hanging jag crazies or something. But so that's what's going to happen. Now, what happens if this country chooses Obama and Biden and their system? Well, long before the end of their next 4 years, the United States will become the second country, maybe third, maybe type. And the national debt, instead of being 16 plus trillion as it is today, will be about 24 or 5 trillion dollars. That's way beyond the national income. Most people will be paying effectively about 70-75% of their income in taxes. Some people will be paying 90-95% of their income in taxes, and a few people will be paying 100% of their income in taxes, except that when you get up into the 90s, those people won't be working anymore. They'll leave the country or they'll do something illegal. And the results will be almost total corruption in the government, because the government is getting all the money and it's using it to gain more and more votes and gain more and more control over the people. And a lot of people say, well, Obama would never run again. Well, his wife might. That's been done before, you know. Look at South America. But it's also possible that he might just say, you know, it was good for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, why can't it be good for me? Let's just forget about that amendment they stuck in the Constitution. It wasn't there originally. Four terms are good, maybe eight. What the heck? Yeah. And freedom will be gone. The ability to create, because freedom and the ability to create go together, will be almost a fraction, small fraction, of what it is even today. And it's much less than it was 4 years ago. So the process will continue to erode, and people will become demoralized. The United States, by the end of the 4 years, will almost certainly exist in name only, if it even does that. And we'll be governed by some hybrid of the United Nations. Obama might still be in there. And maybe he won't run for president of the United States, he'll run for president of the world. Yeah. He wants a promotion. Yeah. The erosion of the military will be almost complete. What military we will have will not provide security for the U.S. We can expect some very, very serious attacks on us, mostly cyber and or we'll call it terrorism. Sharia law may become adopted in some places, totally eliminating most of the protections of the Constitution. And if you're a woman, especially a single woman, you're going to love Sharia law. It's great. When you get raped, all you need is four guys to say you were raped, and you're fine. But if there's only three that say you're raped, they just stone you to death. It's in a fast and efficient way, and it doesn't cost as much as an electric chair, even hanging. Rocks are everywhere. And then you don't have to worry about whether or not you can afford a birth control device. That's cool. Yep. That should work. Real good. All right. So, these are the sorts of things that we can be looking at as our future. Propaganda will become directly controlled from the White House and other parts of the executive branch of the government. They'll actually start controlling the stations that have already acted as though they're being controlled anyway. and the same thing with the news outlets and the media, the whole thing. Yep. By then, that should be completed. And those few stations that are against that, and the majority of actually talk radio, will be gotten rid of. It'll be considered seditious. That'll be the new thing they'll have, a Sedition Act. United States Obama Sedition Act. Anyone doing anything to try to convince people of the falsity of their ways shall be arrested and prevented from further lying to the people. Yeah, that's coming. Sounds great. Sounds great. All right. Those are the things that I see are going to happen. I might be wrong about one or two of them, but I think the general gist of it will be pretty close to what I said. And I'm saying 4 years, but the fact of the matter is probably more like two. A lot of that will be done. Depends upon, to some extent, what the, not just whether Obama gets reelected, because that was the assumption in this model, but we are his key players are in the Senate, and how much he can win the House in the 14th election. So that will be a whole other thing. One way to win an election, by the way, is just to make sure that the number of votes counted are in your favor. It has nothing to do with who votes or how many votes were cast. Just make sure the number. In your favor. There are lots of ways to do that. All you have to do is ask the new Black Panther stuff they have to the club and threatening folks. Ask Holder. He knows how to do it. He's supporting that methodology. Okay. So, those are the things that will probably occur. What happens if we go the other way. Wednesday morning, we wake up, Romney and Ryan. Are they the panacea of all panaceas? Probably not. But Ryan, more than Romney, will probably be pushing for, we'll call it, a freer country with more limited government. Romney's going to be resistant to reducing the size of government very far. And so there'll be a struggle. It's not going to be anywhere near the 100% that I suggested, that I'd like to see. But there's a few things I think will improve for sure within less than 6 months. The energy policies of the United States will radically alter. We will continue to develop, through private industry, all of the alternative energy models, which I think are good. That's good for the country. There's nothing wrong with that. At the same time, coal, especially, and natural gas will take a preeminent role in the United States. Coal will come back as the main supporter of electricity instead of being down below 50% as it is now. They're probably climbing to about 55%, even 60% of producing electricity with some new technologies, actually, that may be workable, a certain type of catalytic uses of the sequestering of some of the smokestack outputs, including CO2, up to a certain point. Probably not at 90%, but maybe at 50 to 60%, which is still way better than where we are, and it allows the industry to continue. And then natural gas will make up for the difference because it'll take a much greater role, especially in some forms of transportation, also taking over the remainder of some of the electric factors, getting rid of some oil-fired stations. And it will also be used in trucks, which is a big change. That alone could reduce by 20% the CO2 emissions if you believe that it is causing a global warming problem. And it's trucks. It's actually cheaper. It'll be cheaper to use natural gas at the present time. Now, natural oil is going to fall in price from about $100 a barrel to about $30. Gasoline is going to fall to about $1.20 a barrel, somewhere in that ballpark, unless they tax it more, which I hope not. And that's the energy policy alone is going to make up for half of the jobs we need to be have people working at 4.5% unemployment, which is like full, that's like full working public. And you only have going to be a 5% to 5.25% people working, underworking in the economy. That's a really robust economy. We'll have growth somewhere, the first year probably about 4 to 5%, 4.5% in growth, and then the second and third years we'll probably see about 3.5% and continue along that line. And that's just because part of that is we've got to pay down the national debt. And the national debt will drop by about $1 to $2 trillion per year, which is okay. Not bad at all, I mean. And Obamacare will be dumped for a new type of open health care where people can shop for, deal with, even have alternative health as part of their plan. All kinds of new things could happen. Will that go, will Romney go along with that? I don't know. Honestly, I'm not sure, but that's a possibility. Maybe that's more hopeful on my part than that. But those sort of things right there, that's a huge change. That's a huge change. We got half of the workforce now. To get down to the 4.5%, the energy thing is not going to be enough. We're going to also need to do a couple other things. We need to drop the corporate income tax, probably down to 15-20%, something like that, maybe 25 at most. And then capital gains tax, take it down to no more than 10%. In addition, people who have offshore monies that they are keeping, you give them a tremendous incentive to bring it back in by any monies they bring in is free from capital gains tax for a period of 10 years or 15 years or something. See all the money coming back in the United States, tremendous amounts. That will fuel the rest of the economy. That'll bring up the bring down the unemployment to what I said, and we'll be able to. And all this can be done in less than 1 year. Now, can you get it through the Senate? Yes. Why? Because I believe this is where Romney probably does have the ability to do the right thing. He'll probably say, look, what do you guys want that we could live with? And let's figure out where everybody's a winner. Not some people win sometimes, but no, everybody's a winner in some way. Do you want to have more taxation in certain areas? I'm like, oh, right. So we can tax more this particular part of something. But overall, I want to lower the taxes. But, you know, you want to get rid of loopholes? We can get rid of loopholes. That's all right. I mean, but I want to get rid of the death tax because I don't want families to be destroyed. We want to improve the life of everybody. At the same time, maybe the Democrats in the Senate, particularly, because that's where the follow-up might come, would prefer having more authority over the president. That would be a jewel of a way. A jewel of a way. He gives up a lot of autonomy. Those executive order bullshit things, you know, bullshit things that I'm talking about, those things can be gotten rid of because you don't need them. They are an obstruction to a democracy, and it makes the Senate happy. Everybody wins on that one. Everybody in the Senate, oh, yeah, let's get rid of that. It's up to us to even anybody you got to have in. So the more the president literally reduces his own authority and control, the more he gets things done in both houses of Congress. Truly does. Absolutely. And there could be a number of other ways. And then you have some amendments. And I think that it's a reasonable thing to keep government out of choices of women to do what they want with their bodies and the whole thing. Okay, look it. This thing is maybe going to go on forever. I gave you the esoteric factors about when a soul consoles a fetus. We talked about that. But you could come to a reasonable standard and actually use that and make a law about it, or you can make an amendment about it to the Constitution. So this is when we believe life exists, and if it can be proven differently, it'll be changed. But, and everybody agrees on it, and now you have no more of this nonsense that we're going to go after people for this or that or other crazy things. And that might be the best way to solve that problem. It's not going to make anybody happy, but it certainly isn't going to make people feel tortured and discriminated against. It's going to allow people to have reasonable ways of dealing with things that seem insolvable and mostly get government out of the whole picture together. Mostly. It would seem to be a more reasonable way of doing it. Could Romney do that? Maybe. I mean, he's had positions on both sides of the fence. Maybe he can go that way. I don't know. He's made it pretty clear he's pro-life. I'm pro-life. But pro-life doesn't mean that you have to protect a cell that someday can become a fetus that might become a soul. That's the difference. I know some people don't buy that model. Oh, it's so right, but I know that they don't buy it. But anyway, it's something to think about. It's a very metaphysical issue, isn't it? When is life? When is life really? Well, one way to say it is, well, if the fetus could survive with nothing, that's one way, or with the most we could do for it, that's another way of looking at it. I said the most we could do for it was one reasonable way of really thinking about it. But that's a still moving target, could change. It's okay. You could put that in an amendment. You could put that in a law. It's possible. But some of the things that most trouble us as a society are solvable from a esoteric way of looking at things, hidden way, that is more metaphysical and spiritual than it is legal. Law is not a great help. I would also like to see courts of equity outside of just bankruptcy courts, which is all that remains of equity courts these days, put back in. 100 years ago they existed, they took them out, and that was a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Justice is not done when equity is removed from law. But that's a whole other story, and I don't think I got time for that one tonight. All right, so the picture I'm painting sounds a little too rosy maybe for Romney and Ryan. I don't know. It seems to make sense to me, but if you think differently, what if I'm 50% wrong? It's still better than the Obama outside of the situation. It really is. I'm telling you, it truly is. If you look at the last 4 years, just use that as a guideline. Don't think of the excuses the guy comes up with. Wow. Think how bad things were when I took over. So what? You had 4 years. Two of those you had complete control of Congress. That's like the ultimate thing that every president would like to have. And what did you do? You passed the most unpopular law ever passed in the history of the United States. That gives the control of 15 people over the lives of everybody in the country by dictating to them what, how and what they can do with their own bodies. Well, that's a cool law. Yeah, that's really great. And it controls 17% of our economy overnight. That's the real danger. And who controls 17% of the economy? The government. Not private health care companies. Don't believe that. It's nonsense. It's not what the law says. Huge danger. Huge dangers. So, yeah, the last 4 years have been not just a failure. They are designed to take over the country and destroy the very nature of what it means to be an American, a citizen of the United States, and the full meaning of what the Constitution is. Obama has done more unconstitutional things in his leaving than maybe every president put together in all of history, including Wilson, probably did the most, and strangely, Roosevelt. Opposite sides, different parties, but those two broke a lot of rules. Now, Roosevelt, you almost can forgive, because he was doing it to protect the country from an evil that the country wasn't able to see. Yeah, believe it or not, we couldn't see the Nazis and evil in the 1930s as it was growing. Sound familiar? And he did, but he didn't know how to get people to see it. And luckily, the Japanese did him a favor. But what would have happened if that hadn't been done? Have you ever thought about that? What would have happened if, instead of bombing us in 1941, the Japanese decided to make a deal with a couple other countries to drill for and refine oil, which is the only reason they bombed us, because we wouldn't sell them any oil. And what if they did that instead? It would have cost them a tenth, a hundredth as much as it did to go to war with us, and we would not have entered the war. Germany would have taken over all of Europe. Japan would have taken over most of the Pacific Rim region. And Italy probably would have been probably no different than Italy is today, because it's just the way Italy is. Yeah. They just didn't like that. Yeah. They never really had their heart in that dictator stuff. They just said, you know, Mussolini was kind of like, he's kind of like a Roman guy, isn't he? That's pretty cool. Maybe people will think we got a Romanness back. Because they didn't get no respect, right? You know? So they maybe thought that was going to help them out. In the end, of course, they hated him. I think they hung him upside down or something like that and cut his genitals off or whatever. But, I mean, you know, the thing is that the whole system would have really gone bad, right? I mean, we couldn't. You have to admit that the act of bombing Pearl Harbor was a godsend. Think about it. Not that we lost 3,400 people or whatever. That was a horrible thing. And it was most of them, I mean, only 2,500, I think, were soldiers or sailors. But the point is that it was still a lot of people. It's certainly up there with the World Trade Center. The two are kind of in a contest who was total died the most. It was a terrible thing. But despite that, it tells us something about right now. This is what I'm going to end the show on, this concept. There's a lot of esoteric elements to the elections that I haven't talked about. One of them is one way to have Romney win is the evil parts that are controlling Obama come from the group soul of evil, if you know what that means. You may not. It's a body of evil thought that exists in the range of the eighth sphere of the astral planes of hundreds of millions of planets or more that exists in millions of galaxies, and that have grown to become hugely successful at destroying life, which is God's growth. And it seems destroy God in its entirety. Now, I think it's necessary to look at this from the standpoint that this source emboldens people like Obama and others that work with him to continue to do the things that they're doing so terribly. And if you can disrupt that source by directing it to other issues and other places at the same time, Obama can become unplugged during a debate. Yeah. You know what? He gets up on the stage and it's just like he's unplugged. I know that's hard to understand, but do you have a better explanation? And I'm telling you that this is going on just as I speak right now. That esoterically, some of this evil thought, which is given to those that want to participate in it, that are physically alive, is being interfered with by having it diverted to others who are doing evil things, because the evil doesn't have good planning capabilities. It can't proportion well. It's good at a blitzkrieg. Throw everything at it and kill it. It's terrible at proportioning. Horrible proportioning and planning out the different areas that he has to use at different times. It's an all for one or forget it deal for evil. And it doesn't work when you start pulling on all of its different, we'll say, needs. And it can overextend itself easily. And then the president gets on stage and he goes, huh? What? And other kinds of people who work in that, work for that re-election group are being interfered. They make huge mistakes. I'll tell you about one of them. They chose not to buy in certain places ads. Where was it? Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Minnesota. Well, they figured they're going to win those states anyway. Why worry about it? But while they were figuring they're going to win those states, the numbers started to change. And they still didn't apply. Why not? Because they're pushing in one place, Ohio. That's it. Ohio got to win Ohio. And they're pushing back in Florida and Virginia to see if they can regain it around there, but they're not looking in the other places as much. That's how they can lose. And that's an esoteric thing, because the reason that's happening is because other problems are being presented through the side of light. We call it the spiritual side of the hierarchy of light, of advanced souls. They're coming up with ways to try to help. You can say, well, that sounds like a fantasy to me. Yeah, it might, but it sure explains a lot of stuff that's happening that you can't explain otherwise. But either way, whether you want to buy what I'm saying or not, I know it to be true. Absolutely, positively know it to be true. But you don't have to believe me. I guess the most important thing is that you believe in light and good, and you do all you can to promote it, and you think very strongly about everything I've said tonight. And if you haven't voted, and you might vote for Romney, go for it. Oh, I'm not going to encourage you to vote for Obama. I'm not. How about that? But at the same time, I'm going to tell you that this is a pretty important time. This is it. We're really up against it. And I don't know how many people, I might be silly to think that anybody would listen to what I'm saying and change how they might vote. But I want you to think about everything I said, and hopefully it will make some difference. If it doesn't change your vote, I hope it changes your thought process eventually and helps you to see the truth and light. Truth may not be what I said it is, but whatever it is, I would like you to see more of it. Because truth is the light of the middle world. And right now we need a lot of that to counter that which is dark and all around us. Well, we're really out of time here. We did lose a bit of the show because of the technical things. I think we've resolved them. I don't know how much. Next week we'll hope and work for an even better engineering aspect. Something going on possibly right here where I am. We'll look into that and see if there's a wire loose or something. Okay. Besides the technical difficulties, I hope this has been an enjoyable show. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.